Watched, the Sek man with the lance through his shoulder snapped off the shaft and gritted his teeth as he pulled himself loose. Blood gushed from the wound, and he stuffed in a dirty piece of cloth. The other men pinned by the lances did the same, painfully freeing themselves by sheer determination. Only Michael stayed in the same position, the remains of his head lolling to one side as his arm swung loosely from the gentle wind blowing over his upright corpse.
Who were they? Who the rat-blasted fuck were those guys?
A corporal dropped the empty clip from his AK-47 and slammed in a fresh magazine.
Barbs. I heard tell of them as a kid. Outlanders that ride the Kentucky Plains, chilling everybody.
Kennies?
The corporal scratched under his cloth cap.
Nope. They just ace you. Don't take blasters or food. Don't rape the women. Just kill folks is all.
Brandon stayed on the hilltop, watching the valley below for any signs of more barbs.
Why didn't they use those blasters? Give them a better chance, at least. They lost more men than they chilled.
Those are just trophies from aced foes. They never used the blasters. Just those spears, or so I heard.
You mean they save blasters the way we do ears and dicks?
Yep.
Outlanders.
Grabbing a lance, the sergeant yanked it loose from the soil. The weapon was over 8 feet long, the barbed spearhead made of steel that shone like winter ice in the sunlight.
Fresh steel. These crazies can make new steel and use spears?
Brandon finally turned away from the forest.
Lances. That's no spear.
The sergeant inspected the weapon curiously.
What's the difference?
Brandon took it from him and pointed.
A spear has a head. This weapon is sharp from the grip to the tip. A lot more deadly.
Yeah, I saw that.
After stripping the dead Private Michaels of his blaster, gun belt, and boots, the Sek man boarded the LAV-25 and drove away in silence. As the wag dwindled into the distance, a lone man rose from the tall grass near the still warm corpse. He was breathing hard, and his muscular chest was coated with a sheen of sweat. With knife in hand, the outlander stared hatefully at the escaping iron box. But the barb wasn't overly concerned, because he knew the ways of the fat norms. Confident in their own safety, they would stop at night and make a campfire to cook food. They would sleep in woven cloth, with only one or two inside the box with its chilling machine. The men inside would be the first to die, then all the rest. Scooping up a handful of earth, he stuffed his mouth full and swallowed the rich dirt. Life renewed filled his body, and on foot, the scarred warrior began to chase after the machine people. In his mind, he was already wearing their blasters. Rich smells of roasting meat permeated the kitchen of the Tennessee Redoubt, four of the 16 ovens radiating waves of heat. Wearing an apron, Christy laid a platter full of fried mushrooms on the counter, and Dean carried it to the table, snatching a couple with his bare fingers. Doc gave everybody a serving, and the companions dug in without talk.
No more for me.
Ryan pushed away the plate of tiny bones.
In Arab countries, that is a mark of appreciation.
JB sliced a small steak off a nondescript roast. He knew it was rat, but fresh meat was healthier than the pre-dark foods, even if the MRE packs did taste better.
Damn straight. Best rat I ever had.
Christy spoke from the kitchen.
I rated the MRE packs. Some salt and pepper, a little mint, and rat cooks just fine.
Mint?
Mildred's fork was paused before her face.
Toothpaste.
Mushrooms best.
Dean's mouth was stuffed full as he shoveled in more roasted meat. He didn't care what it was, as long as there was plenty. The more he ate, the hungrier he seemed to be. Wisely, Doc used a spoon to ladle the growing boy another heaping portion of the mushrooms.
Don't forget to take some vitamins from the MRE packs after dinner. Apparently, the Blues had no idea what the tablets were.
Fools.
Jack chewed on a leg bone.
Dead fools.
Millie, what did you do with the boot soup?
JB ripped open a plastic pack and took a bite of the cherry nut cake inside. 100 years old, and it was still moist. Pre-dark whitecoats probably thought the Matt Trans was their greatest invention. His vote went for vacuum-sealed food packs.
I sealed the rest in a couple of pots and put them in the main refrigerator.
Mildred poured hot water from a tea kettle into a cracked mug. It had some sort of an anchor logo with a Latin phrase that was too faded to read.
We have fresh meat now, and the MRE packs for later, but it never hurts to have spare rations tucked away. When we needed it, the soup kept us alive.
Barely.
Jack added a sprinkle of powdered milk into his coffee, then some sugar. The teenager took a sip and felt the soothing warmth spread through him like a healing potion.
Damn.
Going to a sink in the kitchen, Ryan washed and went to the weapons table. They had food now, and a way into the home base of the Blues. Blasters were now their top priority. Before they left the tunnel, JB had drained the oil from the wag, and once they were back in the redoubt, he filtered it carefully through some washed sheets until satisfied it was pure enough to lubricate the weapons.
2 crossbows, 8 arrows with no heads, 12 AP grenades, 2 pounds of Plasex with no detonators, 2 gallons of fuel, but no bottles to make Molotovs, a roll of fuse we can't get clean enough to work, a Colt 45 with 10 rounds and 2 Kalashnikovs, each with 2 30-round clips and 6 loose rounds.
Doc was picking his teeth with a sharp bone.
Better than before, but hardly a cornucopia of ironmongery.
Rising from the dining table, J.B. carried a coffee cup to the weapons on display.
About 20 rounds were damaged and not salvageable. But I saved the powder, mixed it with some ash from the garage, and got 3 loads for Doc's Lama. The rest I keep.
Where did you get the lead?
Dean mopped his plate with a piece of canned bread.
I had spare lead and wadding, just no powder or primers. John Barrymore, you are a wonder.
Do what I can. Just don't fire that monster too close to me, in case I made the mixture too strong.
Slung over his shoulder was the canvas bag that had held the grens they had found. It now served the armorer as his replacement munitions bag. Mildred had appropriated the other bag found in the wag. It was lighter, some sort of polyester mix that was waterproof. She had washed it 12 times to get the bloodstains out, but some still remained as faint impressions of the original owners. Mildred was already busy rebuilding her stash of med supplies. Boiled cloth in sandwich bags for large wounds, some tampons found in a footlocker for small-caliber bullet wounds, a couple of kitchen knives she had ground to razor sharpness on a grinding wheel in the garage, a plastic bottle of boiled water. The physician even used a hacksaw to cut some copper pipe from under a sink to make trach tubes and to drain pus from infected wounds. A pair of pliers and a small set of tweezers completed the kit. It was a start. No matter how well trained any doctor or surgeon was, he or she couldn't do much without the tools of the trade. Bare hands could kill a lot faster than they could cure. Sad, but true. Christy came out from behind the counter.
Rats are done cooking. Just have to let them cool for a while, then we can stuff them in the fridge.
Mildred topped off her mug.
We have enough food for a week, which leaves us with the problem of blasters.
Ryan lifted an AK-47 and ran his hands along the wooden grip.
We have the element of surprise with that tunnel into the quarry, and we can steal more clips from the Blues as we ace them.
Truth indeed, my dear friend. Yet we need much more plastique to destroy the kite.
A hell of a lot more than we have at present, that's for damn sure.
No time make more, Plas.
Jack tested the draw on one of his many leaf-bladed throwing knives.
So we jump.
I just got a belly of food. Sure like to keep that for a while before puking my guts out after a bad jump.
Christy took a seat at the table.
How long should we wait?
She glanced at the physician.
Hour should do.
Mildred was unwrapping a stick of chewing gum.
2 would be better, though.
Then we make a jump in 2 hours.
Ryan was already disassembling a Kalashnikov for one more thorough cleaning. As the LAV-25 drove through the collection of ramshackle huts, the locals watched the armored wag fearfully. Standing in the turret, Campbell kept his hand on the 25mm cannon in case of trouble. The wag also came with a 7.62mm electric machine gun, but Baron Sheffield had removed the blaster to cover the hole in the wall at the Shilohville. Reluctantly, the sergeant agreed. Their long blasters in the Gren should be enough firepower for any amount of opposition encountered, especially with a pest hole like this. The ville was no more than a small creek feeding a muddy puddle, surrounded by huts made from refuse and roofed with mud. There wasn't even a fence of cut logs to keep out the muties, and anybody could make one of those. The locals were either triple stoop and lazy, or else had a shitload more blasters than they were displaying. Only